You're listening to WFVRLP, and I have on the line John Flansburgh of They Might Be Giants. John, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm in the back of our tour bus, and I'm just getting ready for our sound check at 6, so it'll be good.
Nice, nice. And how has 2018 been so far?
You know, it's been fun. The shows have been a lot of the shows have been selling out, like, way in advance. So it's, which is kind of, you just sort of walk into your day already feeling like you kind of won. So it's a very happy kind of touring.
Have shows been selling out faster and more in advance than ever before?
I mean, you know, I guess like the year that in 1990 when Flood came out, we were, you know, basically just, you know, touring for the entire year, and it was lots of sold out shows, but it was so overbooked that it kind of felt like a life sentence more than you know, like fun. This is at a pace that we can handle. So this is just a very, very pleasant, easy, kind of knowable tour.
Nice.
Good.
Nice.
Yeah.
Does Dial a Song this year feel that same way? In that, I know when you launched it a while back, it was a song every week, and now it's a little bit less, not much.
No, it's been a song every week. It's been
nice.
A new song every week. Yeah. Keeping up with the video part of the Dial a Song thing is a little bit tricky. You know, part of it is just like managing costs of hiring animators and getting stuff done. So it's, but that's, you know, it's just about scheduling and kind of having like, just wrangling people. It's, you know, those kind of projects, which largely fall to me, kind of, it's more just like, you know, mapping things out and getting everybody lined up in advance. But, you know, that's work too.
Yeah.
Sure.
Absolutely. Well, I noticed you've got the spring tour, and then that wraps up, and then a European tour this fall. You just booked a summer festival. Any other plans for summer?
We're doing a show in New York. We're doing this thing called the Clearwater Festival, which was started by Pete Seeger. It had a different name in the 70s, but it's always been on the Hudson River. And it's supposed to be a very beautiful, friends of mine have gone to it and say it's a really beautiful, cool music festival. So we're headlining that one of the days in Croton Hudson. So that'll be one of the things we do this summer. But our summer's pretty open. We've got to really like bank the rest of the Dial a Song tracks for the rest of the year, because once September comes, we're in Europe and we're going across Canada and we're doing another a leg of the American tour. So we've got our work is cut out for us.
Nice. Nice. That's awesome. It's amazing to imagine. You guys are so productive. Would you call yourself a workaholic?
I think that's how what my wife calls me. My dad was a workaholic of a different stripe than I am. So I feel very casual compared to my dad. He was an architect, and he really worked around the clock. He had a firm with like 50 employees, and you know, things went in crazy cycles where like suddenly there wouldn't be any work, and you know, he had to figure out all sorts of things. So like it was a much more adult thing. I think the thing about being in a band is that the way it's set up, nobody expects you to take on much responsibility. So like any responsibility you take on is already kind of a surprise. It's a very, you know, Peter Pan kind of existence, and
yeah.
a lot of accommodations are made to kind of make people comfortable. But you know, I think keeping the songwriting going and keeping like the product quality of what we're doing high is it's definitely a full time job. You know, it's like. But you know, we just kind of work steadily. That's the main thing.
Yeah, and it's just incredible to look at your catalog and everything you've accomplished in so many different creative outlets too. And that's what's striking. I have some in the weeds questions
Sure.
on songwriting. Two of which come from my friend Tom Stepsis, who turned me on to They Might Be Giants in high school in 94 or so. So he writes, in the song Upside Down Frown, there's a reference to a rainbow having a beard. Is it a direct reference to that Cream song, SWLABR? And what does that mean?
Well, I think that the is undoubtedly a reference to the Cream song, yes. You know, Cream is a really interesting and kind of great classic rock band that has been sort of lost to time in a way. I mean, obviously, Eric Clapton, you know, people know Eric Clapton and kind of think of him as this, you know, I don't know, there's something strangely conservative about Eric Clapton. But, you know, when he was in Cream and kind of, you know, under the spell of Jack Bruce, the bass player who wrote a lot of the songs and was the lead singer of the band, you know, they had some really great, very, very original sounds and ideas of what you could do with a band. I mean, if people don't know about Cream, it's Cream is one of the bands that's highly imitated in the on the record of Jesus Christ Superstar. If you actually listen to Jesus Christ Superstar, if you're familiar with Cream and you listen to Jesus Christ Superstar, you can really pick out the parts that are like pastiches of Cream in there. So people probably know more about Cream than they realize, because they're sort of like riffs and sort of melodic runs that are in Cream songs that have been kind of grafted onto Jesus Christ Superstar.
Yeah, what did you think of that Superstar remake? Did you get a chance to see that?
I didn't get a chance to see it, although I did look at Twitter like the next day and saw that everybody kind of blew up. It seemed like it obviously went down a storm. I'm a big fan of Jesus Christ Superstar, but I also sort of, I think there's a sort of a very strange thing about Andrew Lloyd Webber, which is that he is this, he's such a sponge, you know. I mean, whether it's like Stravinsky or Cream, it's like he has his references are very, very knowable in a way.
Right. Overt references inside of Broadway musicals that probably make them more attractive to the general population. I mean, it's amazing to me Broadway musicals are still as popular as they are and get the ticket prices they do. But then again, I don't live in New York City. You do. Does it strike you?
Well, I mean, it's, you know, everything's changed. I think Broadway has gone through, you know, has died a couple of times in like the 70s and in the 90s, you know, or the aughts, you know. But now it's I think with Glee and a lot of these other things, there's a whole new generation of people who are interested in Broadway stuff. It's a lot more young people, a lot more, and the tourist industry is just kind of set up to go. We actually have a song in this SpongeBob SquarePants musical, which was such a surprise hit. It just went up on Broadway like 3 months ago. And I think in some ways it was such an unlikely show, and it had kind of come in under the radar. And when it finally debuted on Broadway full on, it ended up getting a lot of really good reviews, which I think sort of surprised everybody. It seemed very possible that, you know, it could just get, you know, a couple of really downer reviews and be doomed. But that's not what happened, you know. And it was my friend Jonathan Colton actually was involved in putting a lot of that show together. And hopefully it will be a retirement fund.
Yeah, I was about to ask, would you consider writing like a rock opera, like Superstar was originally a studio sustained narrative made in a recording studio, or would you write a Broadway musical, or neither?
You know, I would conceivably be interested. I guess the thing is, it's like it would really depend on whether the book was something that was like motivating. You know, these days most things start with some appropriated. A few years ago, we were approached by a really big wheel on Broadway, and had to sign like a non-disclosure agreement about what we were talking about. But it was just a license. It was like a big like comedy movie from like the 80s, I guess.
Okay.
And like they thought it would be a great, you know, platform to make a musical out of. And in some ways it seemed kind of like handcuffs. I mean, the truth is like there were things about it that were already kind of archaic and sort of uncool just on a, like the sexual politics of it were just so much about like a time that I think everyone's very happy to have in the rear view mirror. Mm. And so it's just, I don't know, it's, I think it would be an interesting challenge, but I don't think we could just do something. We'd be too interested in doing like a, something that didn't have some angle to it that seemed like a fresh breeze. It would really have to be something different.
Total creative control, though. That sweetens the pot. No?
There's no such thing as creative control in a collaboration. I mean, if you don't come to a collaboration like with people with the idea that you can like have a conversation and work in good faith on making something better or changing it around or responding. You know, it's like you've done a lot of things in advertising and a lot of things for television, and that, you know, there's somebody who's clearly the client. Like it's not our project. Like we're just writing music for their thing.
Right.
And I would love to, you know, I would love to say no to like to their terrible ideas. But like, you know, what can you, you know, it's like they're the boss. So, you know, we just what we do usually is just try to give them a couple of choices, so at least that their first answer isn't just no, which is tends to be like a kind of a almost a generic Hollywood response. Like if you only give somebody one choice, like they're just so reluctant to say like this is great, like this really works, thanks. Like they don't feel like they feel like they're not doing their job unless they like start fiddling around. So it's like, you know, yeah, well, you know, I mean, it's a job.
It's a job, but they might be giants as an organization, as an institution. Yeah. You guys have escaped that, I would say, more than other bands in starting label. I mean, you feel that way or no?
I mean, you know, I think that's one of the reasons why we still make albums is that it's very, you know, it's very much our show and our deal. And, you know, it's very satisfying. But the other stuff is interesting work and it's challenging. And I think, you know, we've learned a lot of things from working on television. I mean, we did all the incidental music on Malcolm in the Middle and we did all the bumpers and all the, you know, all the stuff on The Daily Show for years and years. And, you know, it's just a different way of working. I mean, it allows you to do a lot of, I mean, first of all, we get to do instrumentals, which is really interesting. And we get to work with, you know, horns and strings and do all sorts of different kinds of music than just making pop songs.
Right.
So it's an interesting kind of adventure that way. And that's satisfying in other ways. I don't know. And, you know, I mean, the truth is, it's like, you know, there were times when it really like kept us afloat financially and that was good.
Nice. Well, I mentioned creative control. You mentioned in an interview a long time ago the Fire Sign Theater. And I just wanted to connect with you on that. If you had a favorite album or anything you wanted to say about it. They've been doing a bunch of reissues lately. I don't know if you've kept up on that kind of stuff. But do they influence your thinking, the way you think about recording or creativity or lyrics? They're a fascinating bunch, you know?
Yeah, it's a very odd time because, you know, we live in this moment now where there's a tremendous amount of interest in comedy. Mm. And, you know, comedy in many ways is like far more like legitimized now than it was even like, you know, 10 or 15 years ago. We just did like the WTF podcast with Marc Maron, and that, you know, it was just an interesting sort of, you know, kind of just having a conversation with a guy from that kind of background is such a different kind of conversation. But the Fire Sign Theater, I think it's fair to say that most of your listeners are probably not that familiar with them, but they were basically stoner they were radio DJs from the late 60s out of San Francisco, I guess,
yep.
who were kind of big-time stoners, and they started doing this kind of radio theater on their on a radio station that was a sort of freeform. It was on freeform FM radio, which is a very low-stakes kind of radio listened to by hippies. Obviously, San Francisco was like the vortex of a lot of hippie life, and they're very good kind of performers. A lot of the stuff was written, although it sometimes sounds improvised. It's hard to know, but the main thing about it is it has this kind of post humor quality to it, which is very strange. It's like you would think these are comedy records. I mean, they were put in the comedy section,
right?
But there's not a lot of jokes. I mean, it's not really about the laughs. So it's like, it really kind of works, you know, in an era that was like Cheech and Chong records and, you know, things that kind of had there was very broad comedy made for stoners, but the Five Sound Theater were just much more like spacey, you know. It was like the record that people listened to after, you know, Dark Side of the Moon or something. And I found them fascinating. I feel like it sort of suggested a whole other kind of creative output somewhere between, like, you know, concept albums and comedy. Like, it was almost like performance art for performance art. And, yeah, I thought they were just like very interesting. I have not kept up with them at all. I mean, I really heard those records, you know, in my early teens and, you know, their career kind of went up and down. I think there's a thing about Five Sound Theater, which reminds me a little bit of the whole thing about making rock videos, which is, there was this magical time where the dream logic of what they were doing made total sense.
Hmm.
And then things moved forward, and all of a sudden, like, the dream logic wasn't good enough. I feel like their careers really hit this crazy brick wall because nobody was just sitting around like getting stoned and staring at the static on the TV. Like, you know, that was just not, it had to be more than that. And it had to be more than just like strange, spaced out, you know, free associative radio stuff.
There's something, they were making comedy for their time, and as the times changed around them, the comedy. Well, there's something durable about their recordings, though. It's such theater of the mind. It's like, as you were saying, jokes without punchlines. And sometimes I feel like that's a They Might Be Giants song. As well,
yeah,
there's jokes
yeah, yeah.
And there's no explicit laugh out loud moment, but I'm being presented with a reality that I can buy into and really dig into in a way.
But you know, I mean, but the thing is, like, melody is like, you know, the wooden leg that we've been leaning on for the whole time, and that's like, and that's a pretty sturdy thing to have in your toolkit. You know, I mean, like, it's not. I feel like the one thing about writing songs, working with, you know, in a song format, is that it's already, you know, a well-written song already has so much going for it that even if you're pulling at like certain you know, different kind of ideas in the lyric or in the way that the song's arranged, or, you know, juxtaposing different things within the song, It's already a really winning format. I think the thing that's tricky about something like the Five Sound Theater is that it's so, I mean, even at its best, it's so strange and spacey. It's very ambitious. I'm not sure how, you know, what a general audience would make of it. Listen, I like Revolution Number 9 by the Beatles. I like lots of things that are not, you know, I like a lot of things that are coming from experimental impulses or are just simply presented as experimental music, like Harry Parch or something like that. Like, I have a pretty high threshold for that kind of stuff. But I just don't know. I mean, I guess the truth is, it's like, for me, the reason I referenced the rock video thing is because I feel like, you know, having been part of the first generation of people who made rock videos in an ambitious way. Mm-hmm. There was kind of an anti, there were a lot of things that were very, that really broke the rules of how people behaved when they were doing visual stuff. Like, I remember bringing not storyboards, but just sketches of just sort of like a, what would you call it? Like a mise-en-scène, or like just like the scene, the scenes, just like iconic images of like Don't Let's Start. Like I sort of did a bunch of sketches of things, of scenes that I wanted to put together with the backgrounds that I constructed for the video. Mm-hmm. And I remember like the cameraman, not Adam, the director, but the cameraman of the video being kind of like, well, like, isn't that kind of like, can't we just jam on this? Like, isn't that a little presumptuous? And like, you know, these days people go to videos with like full storyboards and like everything's like a little miniature Steven Spielberg production.
Right.
I think the idea of rock videos back then was like, we want to liberate ourselves from commercials and liberate ourselves from, you know, movie making techniques. Let's just improvise something. And it was all about being really improvised. Hmm. And so that's where you get this kind of nickel and dime surrealism stuff that is in so many rock videos of that era.
Right.
And, you know, which I think, you know, like, you know, to some extent, you know, we're as guilty of as anybody, but it's like that stuff. I'm not sure anybody can make a video. And then like when Spike Jonze hit the scene and suddenly had visually arresting stuff that was also extremely conceptual and kind of very wall to wall and very thought through, and kind of funny and very winning. It suddenly really changed it again. Like it totally upped the ante on what rock videos needed to be kind of working at that breakthrough level.
They Might Be Giants have facilitated a bunch of video contests. So do you see that, that kind of inspiration inside of the submissions? I mean, you're really keeping that genre alive to those that don't have the corporations behind them. Some of those entries are cool, man.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, we do a lot of videos for the songs, and we work with a lot of, you know, kind of one person shops. So we're just, whether it's animators or people doing like stop motion things or people doing, you know, just like indie film kind of things. It seems like because we're, you know, like this year we'll be making like, you know, probably 40 videos or so. Just opening it up to other people to, you know, be participants in it only seems fair. I mean, we've actually found a number of the people we collaborate with on a regular basis through the contest. So like we did a video just with this guy, Alex Italics, who, he was one of the winners on the, MI Awake video contest. And he's just a very, very smart young man who's got a lot of, you know, crazy ideas. And I get the feeling I'm pretty sure he'll be directing movies, you know, sooner than later. He's a very visually astute guy.
Nice. It's the responsive community inside of art that just, man, you guys blow my mind. I got two more questions
sure.
So my son, Andrew, he's 13 years old. I think he was two or three when I played him the No album, and the number of hours we clocked in with the bed book and CD and the ABC's DVD specifically, I truly can't thank you enough.
Excellent.
Educationally, we can't even understand what it's doing to the brain at those ages when they're exposed to such music and images. So it's incredible to me too that I don't want to say divorced yourself from the career as children's performers, but moved on from it.
Well, I mean, the truth is we made five albums, and I feel like just sort of the No album and the Y album kind of book each other nicely. And then we made these three educational records in the middle for Disney. And, you know, that's like 100+ children's songs. I mean, I would never say never. I mean, we're doing a kids show in Albany in a couple of days. And that, you know, that'll be a very different show for us than our regular show.
Yep.
But I think that, you know, if we had, it's, it's easier for us to get around the world just doing the stuff that, like, the rock stuff that we're known for, and trying to, if we were bigger, I think if we were playing in really playing in proper theaters all the time, it would be easier to kind of do mixed shows and like have kids be in the shows. But the truth is we play in bars, you know, so it's like, there's always been like a little bit of a tension between doing kids stuff that was on TV and then people just assuming that like whatever show we're doing, wherever we're doing it, is going to be kid friendly. And the strange and sad truth is like, the shows that we do are the opposite of kid friendly. They're actually like kid hazardous. And so it's like, you know, it just constantly puts us on edge, you know, being in the bar where suddenly it's like somebody's like throwing a beer bottle and then there's like a 7-year-old kid on the other side of the room and it's just thinking like, oh man, come on. Like this is, we can't control the crowd.
Right.
And, but we can keep kids out of harm's way. And that was a decision that we had sort of had to make. And it makes us seem super grumpy and like a drag. But the truth is, it's like a week doesn't go by where it's like fairly obvious that like where we play is just not going to be right for kids. But the writing and doing all the kids stuff was such a blast, you know, and I'm really glad we had a chance to do it. And sort of like when you were talking about like doing the Broadway show thing, it's like in the abstract, you know, the idea of doing kids stuff is kind of ambitious. Like you really have to find your voice to do it. Like, you know, it's a different thing than just writing a regular song for us, but it's an interesting challenge and it's exciting because it's so wide open. You know, it's like, yeah, it's for a long time writing the kids stuff was some of the funnest projects we were involved in. Mm. And they were also, you know, and getting back to the work, sort of the working on a deadline thing or like working, you know, like, you know, there will be no compromises thing. Almost all the kids stuff all the kids stuff we did for Disney, we were on like crazy deadlines to do it. And, you know, including getting all the videos made. So they were just like, it was just like being dropped in the, you know, the deep end of the all you can rock pool, you know, like we would have to just kick out all these videos. It was like, so it was so ambitious.
Do you think there's a different or even better level of or feeling of creativity when you're under a deadline like that?
Well, I mean, you know, it's, you just stop being precious about it. I mean, I was going to say like that was the thing about working on Malcolm in the Middle, doing the instrumental music for that show and all the other TV packages that we did. It was, you know, because there was a client, there was definitely like a notion of what the quality had to be, but there was also like, you know, the budgets were often pretty tight and, the expectations were really high and we weren't the final arbiter of what was good enough. So it just kind of focuses you up and it gives you a different set of skills. When we made albums, you know, for the first 10 years of the band, when we made an album, we would go into the studio for 3 weeks or a month. And whatever that was, that would be what the album was. But we wouldn't have been in a studio for like a year or a year and a half or 2 years between that time. And you sort of, there'd be a lot of technology that would have changed. And it's kind of a nerve wracking experience. Like you're just sort of like, okay, but once we started doing instrumental music, we were in the studio like every week, you know, we were in the studio half of the year. Mm. And we were in our home studios the other half of the year working. I mean, we just right around 2000, we just work, you know, doing the stuff. And it's like, It really changed. I mean, it changed our output. It changed our work habits. I don't know. The whole scenario changed. And I think in a lot of ways we got a lot more confident, which has really helped. I mean,
yeah, there is the confidence to the kids' music that, I teach undergrads and I, out of the blue, I showed them the, 7 days a week video. I never go to work. And yeah. To undergrads in week 12 out of 15 in their semester, They're running ragged, and man, it just hit them like a ton of bricks. It's far more than a kid's song. So my last question, John, and thank you so much from my son, Andrew, from me.
Of course.
And I ask everybody who appears on my show, if you could collaborate with anyone, living or dead, who would it be and what would you do? Whatever comes to mind.
Okay. I mean, can I include John Linnell in that?
right on.
I do feel like, you know, we could work with, you know, Pixar and do something that was like pretty interesting. I don't know what the vehicle would be, but I feel like those people really have a handle on how to do smart work, and it would be interesting working with them. I do. That's my stock answer. I'm sticking to it.
That's fantastic. John Flansburgh, thank you so much. It is an honor.
Chris Smith, the honor is entirely mine, and thank you for your thoughtful questions, and I hope I wasn't too bellicose in my responses.
Oh, not at all. Not at all. We went completely off script. Andrew Lloyd
Webber.
Well,
I enjoy the Firestone Theater. I mean, but it also gets me thinking in such, you know, there's such an odd thing. It makes you think about all the possibilities of what is available to the culture, you know.
That's
but
right.
They're definitely their own thing.
That's right. And also, let me say, maybe I'm the first to say happy birthday.
Oh, all right.
Not long from now, you'll be off tour and it'll be your birthday.
It's true. It's very soon. I'm looking forward to celebrating it.
Rock on.
Because I'll be off duty.
Thanks again, John. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.